quarter past three. James King, good afternoon.
Hey, Simon.
It must be Easter holidays.
That's it. And it's, I think Mark's away next week as well. So the Easter holidays must continue next week. Am I right?
Yes, that's right. Mark always leaves you with what is traditionally a rather poor bunch of movies to review. Your overall thoughts about what we're about to...
I would say distinctly average. So, Mark, I'm not going to say if you're listening. We know you're listening. Holidays for you mean listening at home to BBC Five Live and commenting on everything I say. So, Mark.
You'll be texting in any moment.
Absolutely. And I'm reviewing The Ring 2, a horror film. So you know that he is going to have a lot of thoughts about that.
Okay, so movies coming up then, including reviews of Be Cool and Downfall, The Keys to the House, The Rage in Placid Lake, and Ring 2, which I misread as Pingu a couple of weeks back, which would have been a slightly different audience.
Very different
audience.
Don't
you think? Box office top 10 this week, first of all. I'll leave that thought with you. At 10, Maria Full of Grace.
Which is very good, actually. A South American movie that surprisingly got an Oscar nomination for its leading actress and is really, really worth seeing.
Why
really
surprisingly?
Well, because no one had seen it and it's really low budget and no one had heard of it. I can't actually remember the actress's name. So it was a real surprise to even see it up there with all the big names at the Oscars. But it's a really good film about a young Colombian girl who is forced to make money by drug trafficking into the United States. Really good film.
Number 9, Meet the Fockers, still hanging in there.
Making an absolute fortune. Do you remember last time I was on, I said, it's pretty good, but not that great. And your guest, who was in Vera Drake, she started having a go at me because she really liked it. I'm glad that there's no one here to disagree with me today.
No, you're guest-free at the moment. Number 8, Melinda and Melinda. Now, I really want to see this because, Mark was a bit... I mean, he's always been a huge Woody Allen fan. He was a bit iffy about this, but some of the reviews are saying, you know, it really is a return to form.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of Woody Allen films over the last few years, someone has always said it's a return to form, and that one person always gets on the poster.
Oh, okay.
This is much more of a return to form than recently. His recent films have been very, very average. This one is not a classic. It's not up there with the prime years of Woody Allen, which I think are far behind him now. But it is a lot better than before, arguably because he's not in it. You've got Will Ferrell, the American comedian, doing the sort of Woody Allen role. Kenneth Branagh did it in Celebrity. John Cusack did it in Bullets Over Broadway. This time...
That was a good movie.
That's a very good movie. This time it's Will Ferrell. And he makes it, I think, a lot more approachable and a lot more appealing to a bigger audience because Woody's not in it, because a lot of people... don't like the Woodman.
I still think he's just fantastically engaging.
I love him. I think he's brilliant. But, you know, he's done some things in his past that a lot of people don't want to forgive him for.
Still, do you think he's still going back on that?
I think, what would my girlfriend call him? A dirty little old man or something.
Oh, okay. So clearly she's a woman of long memory. Number 7, you ought to be careful people like that. 7, Pooh's Heffalump movie.
Okay, so now, I've got to admit...
Don't tell me, you haven't
seen
this.
No, I know that this happened with, I think, the Tigger movie last time. I hadn't seen it. I'm sorry, I have to admit, I haven't seen Pooh's Heffalump movie. So... the text number, give it out, get some reviews in.
Okay, 850-58-mayo@bbc.co.uk. Shamelessly, you haven't seen it.
I'm sorry.
There will come a time when you and your girlfriend may well take an extraordinary interest in movies like Pooh's Heffalump movie, and they'll become very important.
I fear it may be quite a long time away.
We're learning an awful lot about your relationship at the moment. Okay, 6 is Hostage.
I can't relate that to my relationship in any way, I'm afraid.
Okay.
It's one of the better Bruce Willis movies of the last 4 or 5 years, because most of them have been terrible. It's okay, but, you know, the next thing he's doing is Die Hard 4, so the guy is desperate for another hit movie. Hostage isn't the return to form that everyone wants him to have.
Valiant at 5.
Which is an okay British animation. It's tough because it's up against Robots, which also has Ewan McGregor in it, and is much better. But it's good that Britain is at least attempting its own big... Pixar-style animated movie.
Constantine, number 4.
Which I really like, actually. This is Keanu Reeves. Again, a lot of people hate it. A lot of people have issues with this film. I think it's a real eye-popping visual treat. It's one of those movies where you come out and go, whoa, to quote Keanu Reeves. You go, whoa, wow, that really hit me.
Eye-popping visual treat, is that your attempt to get on the poster?
No, it's already on there.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, it's something like eye-popping visual treat, a must-see... head rush of a movie. It's on there already.
Miss Congeniality 2, Armed and Fabulous, this week's number 3.
It's rubbish. Miss Congeniality was good. Did you see that?
I think I escaped that.
It's actually... No, Miss Congeniality is not a bad film. Quite charming. This one, no. No jokes, no fun. They're in it for the money.
Robots at 2.
Which I really, really like.
And the UK's number one movie is Hitch.
Gone back up to the top, actually.
Which very rarely happens in the movie world.
Yeah, I'm not exactly sure why. I don't know why loads of people last weekend would have gone to see Hitch over the other films, over the new films. Hitch is good. Good fun. Will Smith, very charming. Eva Mendes, I'm a big fan of. Making an absolute fortune. If it's quite as good as the box office would suggest, I don't know whether it's actually that good, but it's a good, solid romantic comedy.
Yeah, good and solid. I mean, Mark was a bit sniffy about it.
Yeah, I wouldn't say I'm sniffy about it. It's just a little bit long, I thought. A bit overlong. They could have cut out one of the subplots.
He's extremely watchable, Will
Smith.
Yeah,
that's the thing.
Even in an average kind of film, you'd watch him, and he's a funny guy, and his delivery is spot on.
That's exactly it. He's very easy to watch, and I would have no problem with watching Hitch over and over again.
That's the box office top 10 this week. What's new, James?
Let's talk about Be Cool. Did you speak to any of the stars of this? Because they were all over, weren't they? With the celebrities?
Yes, absolutely. Yes, we did spend a few minutes with one of them, whose name escapes me just for the moment, but it wasn't Uma Thurman.
John Travolta?
It wasn't John Travolta.
The Rock?
It was The Rock.
Oh,
that's
brilliant.
Who it was.
Dwayne Johnson.
No, yes,
we'll
absolutely.
We'll give him his real name.
We spent much longer with him on a previous outing, on his movie before last, because I remember because he came down to Millbank, and when you're down in Westminster, where they're only used to seeing, Ian Duncan Smith and Anne Widdecombe coming through, they were going, is that The Rock? What's he doing here? Is he standing for, Epping Southwest?
That would be good.
Yeah, but no, he was charming as ever.
And he's very good in the film, actually. This is the sequel to Get Shorty, which came out in 1996, which I'm pretty sure was on TV the other night, actually. In that, John Travolta played this character, Chili Palmer. Right, Chili Palmer.
Can I just interrupt you? Just 1 second. We'll come to your review in just a moment. We just heard that the train drivers' union, ASLEF, has called off industrial action, which threatened chaos on the railways next week. The union says talks with Network Rail have reached a settlement in the dispute over safety. A correspondent is Stephen Cape. Stephen, what can you tell us? What's happened?
Well, effectively, this was a dispute over safety. In some areas of the country, according to ASLEF, drivers who, say, ran into problems, the train broke down, had a communication system which involved something like a mobile phone. And fortunately, according to the union, this was not particularly reliable in those areas. Talks continued up until last night, discussions. The Network Rail said, you've got to talk to the operating companies. The union became infuriated and then said, right, OK, we're now going to only drive trains to a certain point and then stop, and then the drivers are not going to go any further. This is a big safety issue. This effectively got the Network Rail and the train operators around at 2 o'clock this afternoon to have talks with ASLEF. A deal has been reached. It involves trying to improve, obviously, the safety areas where there are concerns. This has resulted that the strike, or you could call it a walkout, it certainly would not be sort of a balloted thing, has now been called off. It would involve several thousand drivers, which means that services will run between London and Glasgow, London and Manchester, London and Crewe, and other areas that would have been hit by any kind of action.
So all the union's concerns fully met, Stephen?
It appears so at this stage, but of course this is just the beginning of these talks. We've got to see where they go from here and whether or not those particular concerns have actually been met as far as the union is concerned. The union has said that it's certainly happy at the moment. Let's just watch this space and see what happens over the next few weeks.
Stephen, thank you very much indeed. Thank you very much indeed. 3:23. Should we try again, James?
Yeah, we're talking Be Cool, which, as I said, was the sequel to Get Shorty, which came out 9 years ago. So you remember Get Shorty, John Travolta, Chili Palmer, small time gangster, small time hood, trying to make it in Hollywood as a movie producer. You also had Rene Russo and Gene Hackman in that too. In Be Cool, Chili's made it in Hollywood. He's made big hit movies. Now he wants to move in to the music business. So he teams up with Uma Thurman, right? Uma Thurman plays a record company boss, finds the artist that he wants to promote. You've got Christina Milian playing Linda Moon, she's called. He wants to promote her, make her big. But of course, he manages to get involved with a variety of crooks and gangsters and all the bad guys, dodgy dealers along the way. You've also got Vince Vaughn, Harvey Keitel as rival record producers, a guy called Cedric the Entertainer, I'm guessing that's not his real name, as a tough guy, hip-hop producer, all these music types. But best of all, we mentioned him earlier, Dwayne Johnson, a.k.a. The Rock, as a gay bodyguard who wants to make it as an actor and who's obsessed with Cher. Fantastic. He's not like that in real life. He's sending himself up. Here it is. This is Be Cool.
It's the only time I gave in my life. But sometimes you gotta do it the studio way.
What are you talking about? Get Lost?
Yeah.
I thought the first one was pretty good.
Get Leo?
Terrific picture. Terrific. And you know what else? It was good.
You know, I'm thinking, Tommy, I think I'd get on the movie business. I'd go back to my old job.
What, being a Shylock?
Yeah.
Why?
At least they're honest about being dishonest.
Come on, what? Why would you want to leave all this? Hey! Hello! Hey! See? I'm telling you, this town, look, Joe, you and me, we come out to Hollywood, sniff the air, and I look at us, man, we made it! And you know why? Because we knew how to hustle a deal.
Yeah, like I got hustled into doing the sequel.
This text from Nick says, Be Cool has got to be the least cool title for a movie. It's a bit like calling a car Charisma.
It is asking for it. It's like Miss Congeniality 2 in the top 10, calling itself Armed and Fabulous. It's asking for film critics who really do go for cheap jokes to say Armed and Rubbish or Armed and Not Fabulous. And Be Cool is a problem because it's setting itself up as being cool and being really, really slick and being really, really stylish. So it's setting itself up for a fall. It's not that bad, actually. It's not as good as Get Shorty. The best thing about it is the cast. So I mentioned some of them earlier. Great for star spotting. So as well as all the ones that I mentioned, Uma Thurman, John Travolta, blah, blah, blah. Cameos are plenty. So many cameos in Be Cool. You've got Steve Tyler from Aerosmith. What a strange-looking man he is. Great performer. Very odd on the big screen.
He looks okay when he's strutting his stuff.
But I just always think of Nanette Newman when I see him, and I don't know why. They're starting to look like, they're starting to morph into one another. Very strange. The Black Eyed Peas as well, they're also in a scene. Andre 3000 from Outkast, he's also in it. Anna Nicole Smith, Danny DeVito, who was in Get Shorty, a couple of cameo moments in Be Cool. The list goes on and on and on. And really, that is what the film is about. Because it's set in Hollywood, because it's about the film industry and the music business, it's all about in jokes and referencing other films, referencing other actors. In a scene that has got a lot of coverage is the dance scene between John Travolta and Uma Thurman, reunited after their dance scene in Pulp Fiction. And it's very good. It's a very good moment, very sexy moment. But really, that sums it up. That's referencing another film, Pulp Fiction, and the whole film is just referencing other films and referencing other actors. Story, not really. Secondary to the whole thing, never really adds up to much story-wise. What there is pretty much all over the shop. So it is much sillier and much more jokey than Get Shorty. I didn't see it when it was on telly the other night, but I remember seeing it, and it seemed to fit in with that whole Tarantino thing of the mid-90s, you know, gangsters and a snappy dialogue, really fitted in the moment, whereas Be Cool is much sillier than that, doesn't have the edge, doesn't have the class.
I remember talking to Danny DeVito about that movie when it came out, but it was that he was in it a lot, and yep. It was the Danny DeVito, John Travolta sort of dynamic which actually made that movie. So if he's barely in it, DeVito, that is going to change the whole dynamic, isn't it?
Absolutely. But there are other good characters to make the movie. Sparky, let's go back to The Rock. He steals the show. Absolutely brilliant in it because he's sending himself up, because he's trying. The others are sort of old timers in Hollywood, people like Harvey Keitel and John Travolta. They've been going for a long time. They've seen it all. They've done it all before. They're on autopilot, really. But The Rock is someone who is hungry to be a movie star in real life and is hungry to prove himself as more than just an actor. So he is really trying hard to be something different in Be Cool.
And
that's why he walks away with it.
And he's absolutely delightful. I mean, he was fantastic talking to kids on the phone when he came in. And was talking to us on the program. But it's entirely my fault. I had assumed that maybe some of his old wrestling chums would have had a problem with the character that he's playing. But according to him, absolutely not. You know, they've all been extremely supportive, and they're very tolerant and understanding and out there.
And he's still doing a bit of the wrestling as well, isn't he? Although he is now a big Hollywood movie star, he's also doing a bit of the wrestling too. I really like him. I think he's really good. And he's trying to do what Arnie did. He starts off as a tough guy, but he's slowly moving into comedy. But I think he's even better than Arnold Schwarzenegger was. Go and watch it, in other words. Be Cool. If you want to see the stars, if you want to laugh at the in-jokes. But I tell you something, when you come out of the cinema, it's almost like you haven't even seen the film because it is so fluffy. It's just about the cameos and the gags.
We're looking for more reviews of Pooh's Heffalump movie.
Have we got any?
Well, John in Colchester says, my daughter Isabel, who's 4, loved Heffalump. It's a gentle, funny film.
Good.
And there aren't that many films that you can take 4-year-olds to and be completely confident. John Paul in Shoreham says the Pooh movie is excellent and Mark should take his girlfriend to see it. Confusing you with with James.
But
James,
maybe Mark's got a girlfriend that we just don't know about.
Mark has just called in saying that he is listening.
Hey, Mark.
It's a sad existence, really, where you take holiday but then have to make sure that you tune in. So I think you should definitely, you know, what a splendid weekend to go and see.
Great.
I think that's going to be a great date.
Saturday night, that's where I'll be. Pooh's Heffalump movie.
And robots, much better than what, according to this text? Absolutely dreadful.
Oh, well, much better than Ice Age, the previous movie that the director made, I think.
OK, so we'll have a more in-depth assessment, please, of Pooh's Heffalump movie.
A dissertation.
The best you can do, and I'm sure a small Five Live Prive is available somewhere. We also have some reviews for Downfall from folk who've seen that, and reviews of The Ring 2. So any comments, welcome, mail@bbc.co.uk. You can text 850585 live at 3:30. We're talking movies with James King and Mark Kermode, listening on the phone and calling in his various comments. How unsettling and unnerving is that?
Have we got anything through yet?
Well, I'm on holiday next week.
Right.
And I'm not going to be calling in. And I'm not... I just don't think it's fair, really. This says... this is Duncan in Sudbury. Be Cool and Get Shorty, both excellent Elmore Leonard books. Sounds like they've been ruined. I think the first movie was actually pretty good.
Yeah, I think it's very good. I don't think this is a bad film. It's a fun film. But I'm not sure whether Elmore Leonard stories are meant to be so funny and jokey and silly as Be Cool actually is. It's just one big in-joke. But, what? You know, that serves a purpose.
OK, what else is out this week?
Let's do this film called Downfall, German film, or as I like to call it, Der Untergang, Downfall. One of those films, on paper, you think, nah, this is going to be so boring, so heavy and so worthy. Actually, when you watch it, even though it is 2 hours, 35 minutes long, it is very gripping. So it's dealing with Hitler's final few days in Berlin, in his bunker in Berlin, last days of the war in Europe. Incredibly detailed. So you get these really quite intimate portrayals of not only Adolf Hitler, but also his senior officers as well, Heinrich Himmler and Goebbels and Goering. And you see how Berlin was falling to the Russians all around them, but from underground in this bunker, Hitler is refusing to surrender, desperately looking for ways out, right up until the last minute, even though everyone else around him knew that it was way too late. And because of the detail, it has this great combination in it where sometimes you think you're actually watching a documentary because it is so detailed, but it also has all the twists and the turns of a fictional war movie. German film, so as Adolf Hitler, I think you've got the first German actor in like 50 years to actually play Adolf Hitler. You've got a guy called Bruno Ganz, who is in Germany, he's like the Anthony Hopkins of Germany, theatrical legend. And it's a really good portrayal because he doesn't go down that cartoony route. That's the way you don't want it to go. That's the mistake a lot of people do it. Let's ham it up. Let's be really OTT. He doesn't do that. Okay, sometimes he's plays it like a madman, but sometimes he's just quiet and introspective. So it's a really rounded performance. But actually the best thing, and this I think is what makes it interesting, on paper dull, but when you watch it interesting, because there's this other character, real character, called Traudl Junger, who was Hitler's secretary. And this is how you're drawn into the movie. It starts off with her narrating it, and it ends with her narrating it. And she's not part of the Nazi party, she's not part of the military, she's just someone doing her job. And she, the real Traudl Junger, voices over the beginning and draws you into the film. So from the start, you know it's not just going to be about the gung-ho war talk, and it's not going to be just about the famous figures. It has got this everyday human being in the story too, giving it some heart. Downfall is a really good movie.
This from Stuart Britton, who said, saw Downfall last night. It's a brilliant study of the final hours of Hitler in his bunker before the surrender of the Nazi regime to the Red Army. The most chilling moment for me was seeing Magda Goebbels putting her children to sleep in the bunker using a sleeping drug and then poisoning them, since she believed that, quote, a life without National Socialism is no life at all. It's long at 2.5 hours, but worth it. Time flies with films that are this good. I remember we did a piece on this film when it opened in Germany. A lot of the controversy entirely based around the fact that it portrays Hitler as a slightly more humane person. You know, you see him being forgiving and understanding and compassionate towards his secretary particularly. But I haven't seen it. But presumably the strength of the film and of Bruno Gunz's performance is that it makes you think, well, it's too easy to say he's a monster, because that means we don't have to explain it, because we can just put him in one compartment. But actually, if he was a human being, we have to struggle a little bit more, don't we?
And because he's portrayed as a human being, and because he does have these moments where he's not exactly a nice guy, but he does normal human things and behaves perfectly reasonably to people, because he has those moments and he is much more of a rounded human being than we've seen before, when he does do the really terrifying things that he does do, they are all the more chilling. If he was just this flat, one-sided performance, then he'd just be giving you what you expect.
But presumably, actors have always done it like that, because to do it any other way would cause so much controversy.
Yeah.
Given the crimes that he was responsible for, you know, you have to portray him as a madman or a psychopath or whatever. And he was clearly both of those. It's that other side, the compassionate side, which no one has managed to do before.
But you don't come out of it thinking, Adolf Hitler, what a nice guy. You do come out of it, of course, thinking this was absolutely terrible. I think the message is rammed home even more clearly, though, because you do see the occasional softer side too.
Okay, so Downfall, going to be one of the most interesting films of the week. Is it got a general release? Is it going to be distributed properly across the UK, or will it just have a few select releases?
A few to start off with, but it will gradually get around the country. It is long. I mean, 2 hours 35 minutes is a long time to spend with a story that is this downbeat, but it is worth it.
Yeah. Bruno Ganz, many people have told us he's Swiss.
Yeah, I knew he was Swiss, but he's
German speaking, and that's the thing. Yeah. He's the first German speaking actor to play
and
Hitler.
Adopted by Germany as their own. I looked it up earlier, and it said Swiss.
With one bound, he was free.
If I don't say speaking, if I just say he's German, then everybody's going to complain. And what did I say? I just said German. I didn't say German speaking, but he's loved by all in Germany.
Thank you. This from Steve in Trimley, St Mary. We're just trying to get away with the fact that the Poos Heffalump movie has not been reviewed on today's programme because James, part-time critic, didn't go and see it.
I've seen 9 out of the 10 top 10 films.
Okay.
9 out of the 10.
This from Steve in Trimley, St Mary, says, Poos Heffalump movie, a searing indictment of social injustice and alienation in the 100-acre wood. That's what you've missed.
Yeah, that sounds great.
Jan, on the subject of Downfall, said I saw it yesterday as well, was impressed by the more nuanced portrayal of Hitler, but not by the whitewash of the SS. She'd give it 7 out of 10. What would she be referring to there?
I don't agree. Presumably she means that some portrayals, and if you're looking at like the portrayal of Himmler or some of the other generals in the Nazi Party weren't as detailed, and some of the aspects weren't as detailed. I actually think the whole thing was really detailed, and you do actually come out having learned a lot of things. I don't feel that there were any whitewashes there. She may disagree and know more about the subject than I do.
Some people have suggested that actually the most terrifying performances do indeed come from Goebbels and from Goebbels' wife and from Himmler.
So cold, especially we mentioned the moment with Joseph Goebbels' wife and what she does to her children. But those performances are so icy and so cold. And of course, towards the end, we all know already that a lot of these high up officials committed suicide because they couldn't stand to be taken alive. And those moments are handled with such coldness, and that really, really. It's something you don't forget about, images you don't forget about when you've left the cinema.
This sounds like one of the movies, a bit like Passion of the Christ. You have to be in an appropriate frame of mind to go and see it. Maybe, you know, standard Friday night out, you're not going to go and choose to see Downfall. But the thing that makes it exciting from the way you've been talking about it is that it is genuinely doing something new.
Yeah, doing something new. But also, I don't want, and I'm sure the film company and the film actors and director don't want it to be seen as something that is worthy and dull and educational and boring. It is educational, but it's not boring. It does have the pace to it, and it does have the thrills to it. And certainly towards the end, when we're following more and more this secretary character, Traudeljunga, it does become, because we don't know much about her anyway from previous films, it does become much more like a fictional film where you are following this heroine, and it doesn't become bogged down with the stuff we already know. And because of that, because it's doing something new with a new character, it is very entertaining, despite what it's about.
Vivek in Edinburgh says, on the subject of Constantine, which you seem to like, Constantine is absolute tosh.
Yep.
Simon, can you imagine a guy armed with holy water in the Bible going to fight against the bad guys? Absolute nonsense.
It's a fantasy film.
Oh, I see.
It's one of those ones. It's not real.
Is it Ringu 2 next?
Yes, we'll do that next.
It's quarter to four, and this from Simon Ludders on an email. So, why does Downfall sound like a bad film on paper? You mean it's hard-hitting, cerebral, emotional, and not mere popcorn, whereas Constantine with Keanu sounds such a great idea?
I didn't say it sounded bad on paper. I've got my script in front of me. What I said, right, here
script?
It is. Downfall, one of those films that on paper sounds heavy and worthy. Not bad, just heavy going.
I thought you just made it all up.
But they made it entertaining. They make it interesting. But, I mean, I'm sorry. A lot of people in this country, the thought of going to see a 2.5-hour film about the last days of Hitler is not going to get them excited. That is a fact. Yes, intelligent people, maybe it gets your juices flowing, but for the majority of people, they're going to think, no, I want to go and see robots instead.
Downfall, says James in High Wycombe, is a monumental piece of filmmaking that keeps drawing you in. It's like an episode of 24. It's relentless and astonishing, and this weekend's must-see. Whether it makes it to James' Movie of the Week, you'll have to wait and see. What else is new, James?
This is the bit for Mark. So, Mark, I don't know where he is on holiday. Do you know?
No, we should probably not say.
Yeah. Wherever you are on holiday, you're listening. Hi, Mark. This is the bit for you to text in, because this is where I'm reviewing a horror film. And it's a horror film that we have differing opinions on. So get by your phone now. Ready? The Ring 2. Right, so Channel 4 have been showing the original Japanese versions of Ring 1 and Ring 2 over the last couple of
nights. Which he thinks is immensely superior.
No, they're both very good. Great films. The American remake of the first one came out a couple of years ago, was much more mainstream. Now we've got the Hollywood sequel to that remake. And the Japanese director of the original versions has come on board. Hideo Nakata is now directing the American sequel. And what he does is he makes things a lot more weird than the last one, a lot actually less audience-friendly than the last one. So this is the deal with the first one. Naomi Watts was a journalist investigating stories of this videotape. So scary, so freaky. When you watch it, you get a curse put on you, and a week later, you're killed. Part two, the new one, even though Naomi Watts has now moved out into the middle of nowhere, escaped, she thought everything was behind her, the tape surfaces again. It's come back. And the curse is let loose. And the scary girl from the videotape, Samara, evil-looking thing. Have you seen her? Long, greasy hair. Very scary.
Oh, her?
Yeah.
She works downstairs.
She tries to possess Naomi Watts' young son. Here's The Ring 2.
Have you ever seen something so scary that you had to show to someone else? Yeah, I mean, like, you know, a movie or something.
Oh.
Okay, I've got the scariest freaking movie you'll ever see. Yeah. A buddy of mine actually turned me on to it. And he made me a copy, so I did one for you.
You brought me here to watch a video?
Well, 2 minutes. Okay, 2 minutes and it'll all be over. It's totally underground stuff.
That we were gonna just...
Well, no, we will. We will. You just gotta see this. Okay, I'm telling you, it's...
How about after?
No, you need to watch it now. Okay?
Do we get cursed just to listen to that?
I hope not.
It's a bit disturbing.
Yeah, it's very disturbing. What you need to know is this, is that the hardcore horror fans really like The Ring 2 because it's a much darker movie, it's slower, it's murkier than the first one. Not really. I mean, we heard in that clip about the scary videotape, but ultimately, The Ring 2 isn't really about the videotape anymore that was so prevalent in the first one. Much more about this child and his mother, played by Naomi Watts, and what she has to do to save him from being possessed by this ghost. And that is what the real horror fans like about it. So we think we can, in that camp, we'll put M. Kermode, right?
Yeah.
He's over there. What I personally think is that I didn't enjoy it as much as the first one because it is less audience-friendly, because it is less gripping, and it doesn't have the real simplicity and the real scariness of that simplicity that the first one had, which was a journalist trying to solve a mystery. That's what it was about. This one, much more complicated, much darker, much drearier, does pick up a bit towards the end. So you're about 1 hour, 50 minutes into it, all of a sudden, things get quite interesting because Naomi Watts has to make some life or death decisions about how to save her child. And you're thinking, at last, some emotional hook that can grab me and I can start to be interested in this film. But for so much of the film, it is about the special effects and it's about the mood, all of which gets very, very dark and boring and dreary. And the genius of the first one was just the simplicity, right? Watch the videotape, you're cursed. We're all like, wow, that's really scary. This one, it's bogged down. It's bogged down by those special effects. It's bogged down by those endless, moody, slow moments that don't really pack a punch like the first one did. But having said all that, go and watch the Japanese versions because they're superior to either The Ring 2 or The Ring 1 American versions. I wasn't really that scared. I really wasn't that scared because even though you can have scary monsters, you can have ghosts, you can have the mood, you can have the atmosphere, if you don't really care about the characters, you can never really be that scared. The special effects are there, look great, but you don't really care enough to actually be scared by any of them.
This from Tom in Worcester says, Simon and James, I saw The Ring, the first film in Brighton when it first came out. I was 20 at the time, and I'm not afraid to admit that I was extremely scared all the way through it. My girlfriend and I were staying at a B&B, and I couldn't sleep a wink due to a large mirror at the end of the room, which reminded me of the one in the film. I couldn't sleep once home either and had to sleep with the light on. This is a 20-year-old speaking, albeit a lava lamp for 2 weeks. I've never been so afraid of a film, and I am so torn between seeing the new one or not. Any ideas? Will I wonder what happens, and will that thus induce nightmares, or shall I see it because it all ends on a happy note? Your help will be much appreciated. So bearing in mind that Tom in Worcester was completely freaked out as a responsible 20-year-old, so he had to sleep with the lava lamp on.
Yep.
Do you think he should go?
I don't think he should go, not because it will really freak him out. I just don't think he should go because he might just be quite bored by it. It's just not as exciting as the first one.
Might enjoy the lava lamp more.
Very possibly. On a similar note, I got an email from someone the other day who'd seen the first Japanese version, Ringu, the first one, which was on TV the other night. And part of the point of the whole plot of The Ring is when you watch this videotape, your phone then rings. And that's like a sign that the curse is started. And he claims that after he had watched Ring on Channel 4, his phone then rings and he picks it up and there's no one there. And because of what had just happened in the film that he'd been watching, completely freaked him out. And he asked me, did this happen to anyone else? Was it some part of elaborate marketing plan by the makers of the new Ring film to try and get people talking about it and to try and get people interested again? But whatever, it completely freaked him out. I reckon it was just a mate having a laugh. It's a good gag if you want to wind someone up.
It does sound pretty scary. Paul in Newcastle says, I saw a preview of The Ring 2 last night. I actually enjoyed the original Hollywood remake of The Ring, but The Ring 2 is awful. It's the quintessential bad sequel. They've got a star and a premise, but absolutely nothing else. It's dull, it makes no sense, and fairly importantly for a horror movie, it's not at all scary. They've even abandoned the central killer videotape hook and the unintentionally hilarious deer attack. What? Has to be seen to be believed. Overall, I couldn't help but think that if they just put the lid on that spooky old well at the end of The Ring 1, we could all have saved ourselves £2.06. What's the hilarious deer attack?
Well, there's this moment when Naomi Watts and her son are driving through the middle of nowhere and she hits a deer and then hundreds of them descend upon her and block her way. And because it's dark and it's misty and you know that it's meant to be scary, you're thinking this is all a bit odd. But I was personally just thinking of there's that Woody Allen sketch about the moose. So I hit this moose once.
Oh, yeah. When he was doing stand-up.
Yeah, so I just thought...
That's Woody Allen, not the moose.
Yeah, I just thought of this Woody Allen gag about him hitting a moose, not, oh, my God, I'm really scared, it's The Ring 2.
OK, so that's not going particularly well. No. On the subject of Pooh's Heffalump movie, Rosie, helping us out, well, sort of, says, I haven't seen it either.
Right. How is this helping us out?
Well, not really. But she says, I've seen the adverts. I think it's a travesty of the A.A. Milne original. In the film, the heffalump is a sweet little elephant, but in the book, it's a scary... I think she's... Anyway, in the book, it's a scary monster that they never find. I wish the film industry would stop making children's books into happy stories with morals. So she's fed up. And also, people fed up with your Ice Age comments, I think. Catherine in Devon, Ice Age is a great film. My kids, aged 9 and 4, voted their favourite film ever. Slapstick humour is spot on. Curtis says Robots was a gentle enough film, visually nice, never used the word nice in a review, but a convoluted cheesy story with a corny You Can Be Anything If You Want To Be, moral. Nothing new. Ice Age, like Iron Giant before it, came from left field. Great gags, characters and script. Ice Age pushed the envelope as an animated movie rather than locking it shut.
I agree that The Iron Giant is a great film. That was directed by Brad Bird, who then went to make The Incredibles.
But on this show just a couple of weeks ago.
I like Ice Age. I just think that Robots is better.
Jay in London. The Ring was dull, boring, and most of the film was pointless. Nothing was solved, and the second sounds worse. Lawrence Williams says, I saw The Ring 2 in America last week, and as a big fan of The Ring, the US version was very, in capital letters, disappointed. It was nowhere near as scary as the first film, which, despite virtually no gore, managed to make me feel creepy and jumpy and relied too much on visual effects and predictable shockers. However, I think I was in a minority.
Nothing from Kermode yet.
Nothing from Kermode. I would imagine Mrs. Kermode is saying, you don't pick up that phone. What else do we have to say?
We'll do some DVDs, shall we?
If there's anything worth seeing.
Well, yeah, this is out on Monday. The Manchurian Candidate. This is the Denzel Washington movie, the remake of the Frank Sinatra film. Political conspiracy thriller. Denzel is playing a retired Gulf War soldier who uncovers a plot by high-up politicians to brainwash fellow war veterans. You've also got Hollywood legend Meryl Streep in there as well, as brilliant performance from her as this evil, conniving political campaigner. And Liev Schreiber, who's a really good actor, probably most famous for the Scream movies. He was in the three Scream films playing her son. He's really, really good in this. And it's a good film. Very solid, engrossing thriller. Denzel's great. I do think Denzel is Mr. Reliable in films. If I see him in a movie, I think whatever the quality of the actual film, I can rely on him to give an interesting performance.
I think Philip Seymour Hoffman is...
is another
Mr.
one.
Reliable.
Is Mr. Reliable too. Put them together in a film, you're into a winner. He is actually, Denzel, a lot more screwed up in this than normal. He's actually a lot more vulnerable than you've normally seen him. At times it goes a bit sci-fi. You sit there watching it, political conspiracy thriller. Then in comes a bit of sci-fi. Like, whoa, what's happening here? Hang on a second, Denzel. Don't go down this route. But it's only 5 or 10 minutes. On the whole, if you want a strong, intense political thriller, this works, The Manchurian Candidate. Directed by Jonathan Demme, who's a good director. He did Silence of the Lambs.
Isn't one of the problems, I seem to recall, Mark, observing about this, that actually the thing that doesn't work, the thing that isn't scary, is that ultimately what they're saying is it's big business that's out to get you. You know,
yeah.
It's the big corporations. Well, that's kind of... it's not that scary, is it?
But it's the way that the corporations are going about it. And if I revealed too much, then I'd give the game away. But the political, the big corporations in The Manchurian Candidate aren't just mildly scary big corporations. They are people doing things with our heads that we don't want to be done.
Don't say it like that. You're kind of freaking me out.
I was waving my finger at you.
Trev, listening in Osaka, says, now I am freaked out. I was listening to your story about the guy who watched The Ring.
Yep.
And after it finished, the phone rang and there was no one there. Exactly the same thing happened to me. No one knew I was watching it. I was watching it in Japan, which added to the freakiness. I am now even more spooked.
Maybe it's not just him. Maybe it wasn't just his mate playing a prank.
Maybe it's real and true.
Or maybe not.
Maybe not. Anything else?
Well, just quickly, we've only got a minute left. Churchill, The Hollywood Years, this is out on DVD. Rubbish. It's the deal is it's trying to spoof how Hollywood might make a movie about Winston Churchill. They'd do what they did to Pearl Harbor, and otherwise they'd glam it up, they'd throw in a love story, they'd tweak a few of the facts. So this is this deliberately over-the-top, tongue-in-cheek version of the Winston Churchill story, where he's actually an American, played by Christian Slater.
I remember this.
And he single-handedly wins the Second World War, and he romances Princess Elizabeth, who, of course, went on to be Queen Elizabeth. It's not funny. It's done by the comic strip people, who were funny in the 80s. Peter Richardson is the director. Comic strip stuff in the 80s, great. They've forgotten the jokes. They can put Vic and Bob in there. They can put John Coleshaw in there. If you don't have the jokes, it doesn't work.
Movie of the week, James?
Downfall is a good film.
Sure.
Yeah, okay. It's not going to be number one next week, but it's a strong film.
Okay. James King, thanks very much indeed. Phil Williams with you next week. Drive comes next. Have a good weekend. You're listening to 5 Live on AM, on digital and online.
Live news, live sport.
This is BBC Radio 5 Live.
Thank you, Simon. Good afternoon. 4 o'clock, this is Drive with Asma Mir and Peter Allen. Main story today, Catholics wait and pray as the Pope's life draws to an end.
Also in the news, next week's rail strike is called off and work begins to revalue 22 million homes in England, which could mean higher council tax bills.
In sport, Alan Shearer decides to carry on playing for 12 more months. Arsene Wenger says that Arsenal didn't kick-start the Ashley Cole inquiry, and the referee will have the final say on whether Jermaine Pennant can play tomorrow.